Hey. I have a cat.
I see that.
Who is wanting to co-host today.
He should just tell the whole story.
No. I think he does talk to me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How many beers have you had today?
A sip. I think other cat owners will... Look at what he's doing. He's making it sound weird. I think other cat owners know the meows. There's different meows. Yeah. You know, like there's different the way the eyes look, the whiskers.
I feel that way about my dogs.
Yeah, I think that they have a way of communicating.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, this is, we can have like meow conversations. Look at me meow and I'll meow back and
maybe you're cussing him out.
Oh damn.
He's like, this bitch, I'm just trying to give her some love, and she is just cussing me out.
Welcome, everybody, to another awesome week of Case Files with Kat.
And Ashley.
Oh, man. And did you see the text from Sarah?
Yes. I was like, wait, which one?
Yes. But yes. So tomorrow, not that one, tomorrow... August 9th is the 50-year anniversary of the
Candyman
killings. Yeah, so they're re-releasing the John Doe, the unidentified remains. They released a new sketch based on those remains in hopes that they can find who that person is. For those of you who have not listened to season one, episode one, because it's now no longer available. I might have to redo it just because of the anniversary and all. I didn't realize it was 50 years.
It did have the most listens when it was up.
And then they said, these girls are crazy, and they just didn't come back.
I had to take season one down if you're a new listener because we were on a different platform and there were ads and it was loud and we weren't
drunk people.
Yeah, so we took season one down so people wouldn't start there and think that's what our show was.
So. Now it's just loud and drunk people. It's us. We're the loud.
but it's our own doing now.
Or my children or the cat hitting the microphone. Yes, so, yeah.
It's different. Okay. Anyways.
It's different.
We have redone some of the first season.
I haven't yet. I really thought about it for this week's episode. I did think about it, but this one I've been kind of dropping hints now for 2 weeks. So I'm gonna, I'm just gonna get into it.
Okay.
I mean,
let's go.
I should check in with you. How is everything? Oh. How you doing?
Great.
How's the medicine working out?
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Y'all, mental health help.
Getting... I sleep better. I get through the workday. I don't hate people as much. So.
And the anxiety.
Oh, yeah. The anxiety is pretty much gone. Oh, unless I'm doing like a presentation in front of a room full of people.
Which I heard she nailed. But, you know.
We'll have two next week. So, fun. But anyways, yeah, for the most part, it's way under control now. So
I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, it's going great.
Maybe I should look at that. No, I don't. I mean, my anxiety is like...
My
anxiety is at night because of pain. So it's like a really different, like I just know it's about like as soon as I start to relax, the pain starts to happen. So like that, that... I don't have it throughout the day.
Yeah.
It's just...
Mine was like a constant all day, every day, entire body, day, night. Couldn't get anything done.
Oh my gosh.
End of world happening all of the time.
It kind
of,
so. You know...
It is everywhere ending, but it was like everything was like that bad gut feeling you get sometimes all of the time for me. So.
And that is just it's not right. You shouldn't have been living like that. I love that you are not living like that.
Yes.
That makes me so happy for you. And look, Louie's saying that too. Okay. So.
Now that everyone else is depressed, welcome to the show.
I will say again, if you need help, reach out. Yes. We'll help you get resources. I'm telling you, you're not alone.
Yes.
You're not alone. Ashley tried to be alone. And then I made her be my friend. So you're
They called me Mumbles before we met.
I never knew that.
Yes, the chamber used to call me Mumbles because I never really spoke. I was
wow, and now we're Cashly.
Spoken. I spoke when I was spoken to.
Oh, I'm so glad that's different. You're killing it. Okay. Okay. That was loud. Okay. So tonight I'm doing the story that I said I was going to do. Okay. And I learned about this one on accident. And then I was like, oh, this is interesting. Oh, sounds kind of weird. So I started digging more into it, learning more about it. Then I listened to all these different podcasts about it. And then I watched the actual footage of the trial. Then it was crazy. Like I watched so much. Just really taking it in. There is a documentary. It's not available now, but there is a documentary. It's only available on Showmax.
Oh, wow.
Which is not available here. I don't know. Maybe someone can give me a pointer.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard about Showmax in a while.
Yeah, so if someone knows how to get Showmax, I don't know. Yeah, maybe I should have just asked you. Yeah, sure. Okay, so today's episode, I'm going to be talking about the South African cult, Electus Purdeus, which means chosen by God, and the Krugersdorp killings. Krugersdorp. I'm going to try not to...
That's a fancy
word. I'm going to really try very, very hard not to butcher these South African names, but I love their accent. Oh, my God. Okay, so this story has a lot of characters and twists and turns, and I even found someone's like board where they took the red string to put with the pictures, and I was like, yes, that's exactly what I mean, to try to make sense of all of these things and as they happened, because they kind of happen over a 4-year period, but I'm just going to cover the basics to keep it down to one episode. But
sorry, real quick. Yeah. Showmax is only available in South Africa as of now. The only way to watch it anywhere other than South Africa is if you use a VPN.
VPN, which yeah. I still haven't figured out how to do. Okay. So yeah, but then you'd have to subscribe and do all those things. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So this is going to be one episode, but please, please, please go and listen to Queen Havoc and her murder cult.
Oh,
it is a
habit.
Yeah, so I listen to it on iTunes, but it's an iHeartRadio podcast, and
a great name.
It is awesome. It is awesome. But it was made by an American. He's a filmmaker, producer, actor with a voice. Boy, his voice is just like you just get into it. You're like, yo, so deep and like,
yeah.
Ooh. Anyway, but it is so, so, so good. Please go and find it, because it really is like worth your time if this is a story that even is remotely interesting to you guys. So Queen Havoc and her murder cult. Anyway, okay, so I have to start with a little bit of local history and how it fits into the context of the story. It's easy enough just to talk about a cult, but in this case, a satanic cult, or what they thought was satanic, or what they coined as a satanic cult. They meaning the police, media, those kinds of things. And what was sort of told, it wasn't really a satanic cult, but it was, you know, this is what they called it. So many of you have heard us mention satanic panic, right? That was a big deal in the United States. I mean, it was, you remember this. You weren't alive, but this was in the 80s, mostly 90s.
I was alive in the 90s.
The 90s and 90s.
In late 80s.
But still.
Jeez.
Baby. Okay, so, but around that same time, it was also happening in post-apartheid South Africa. Oh. Can you hear that?
Yes.
Whose is it?
I don't know.
Is it yours? I don't know. Okay, so it's just...
It stopped.
Okay, so satanic panic was happening in post-apartheid South Africa, and there are a couple of reasons for that. So there, and I think that maybe it was a little bit different in South Africa. And so this is from Wikipedia. Okay, you know, the truth teller of all things, Wikipedia. Yes. But I felt like it was really, really well said. So South Africa was particularly associated with a satanic panic because of the creation of the occult-related crimes unit in 1992. Oh. described as the world's only ritual murder task force. And it was.
That's crazy.
It absolutely was. According to anthropologist Annika Teppo, this was linked with powerful conservative Christian forces within the then dominant white community in the last years of apartheid. Christian belief is a prerequisite to serving in the unit.
Of course it is.
The concern with the alleged presence of Satanism and occult practices has continued into the post-apartheid era. The SAPS, the Satanic, what is it called? What did we say it was? The South African, oh God, the occult-related crimes unit. It was just not SAPS. Anyway, the SAPS, South African Police Squad, I guess, occult-related crimes unit, was established in 1992 during the final years of apartheid by born-again Christian Cobus Jonker, prompted by former Minister of Law and Order Adrian Vlock. Jonker joined the SAP in 1969 and was previously head of the Port Elizabeth Murder and Robbery Unit. During his, this is so funny, during his policing career, he earned the nicknames Donker Jonker and
wow,
I know, in the Hound of God and God's Detective. So what I will say.
Did you say God's Detective?
God's Detective. Hell yes.
Okay.
I will say this, though. There were a lot of cases that came before court, and yeah, this is when the actual physical law, the yeah, law, the courts would take a plea of demonic possession as a reason to have committed a heinous crime.
Yeah.
That was applicable.
Oh.
But it wasn't always believed, and it was up to Donker Jonker. Donker,
God's detective.
God's detective.
Did his business card say that?
I don't know. That's a really good idea. But he would say, nah, that wasn't Satanism. No, that wasn't the occult. No, that wasn't blah, 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 blah. There was one that they were like, okay, this is actually the first case of a human sacrifice. So, like, that was, they believed it in this particular case.
Can you imagine how crazy you'd have to be the one case?
Well, that was the first.
Oh, okay.
That was just the first.
I was
going
to say, to be the, yeah.
There were a lot of people who were like, oh, I was possessed by a demon. And it's not that he didn't believe in, he believed in demonic possession.
He just didn't believe these particular people.
Right. They were like, nah, that had nothing to do with the occult. Nah, that wasn't it. No.
Okay, that makes more sense.
You're just using it. So it wasn't like willy-nilly. He was out there just, everybody's a Satanist.
You know,
he wasn't doing that. So as late as 2006, SAPS defined cult-related crimes on the occult-related page of their website as follows. A cult-related crime means any human conduct that constitutes any legally recognized crime, the modus operandi of which relates to or emanates primarily from any belief or seeming belief in the occult, witchcraft, Satanism, mysticism, magic, esotericism, and the like. Included in the scope of occult-related crime are ritual multi-medicine murders, witch purging, I don't know what that is, witchcraft related to violence, and sect-related practices that pose a threat to the safety and security of the Republic of South Africa and or its inhabitants. I think that's pretty broad. Anyway, so basically Satanism was a real threat and they investigated it as such.
A witch purge is the same thing as a witch hunt. It says it's the search for people who have been labeled as witches or evidence of witchcraft.
So then wouldn't that be what they wanted?
I don't know, but weird. That's what it says.
You can't be a vigilante. Maybe.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know, but it says a witch purge is the same thing as a witch hunt.
That's weird. Okay. So basically, Satanism was a real threat and they investigated as such. This is not to say that all crimes were satanic in nature, as I mentioned, but in this super Christian, post-apartheid, racially, still pretty racially segregated South Africa, it was a real thing. And I will say right now that both the victims and the perpetrators were white in this story. Like, everybody is white. I just wanted to put these crimes into, I don't know, I guess a different kind of context because it does matter. It's a little bit different. You know, it was these really very, oh my gosh, what's the word? Very very Christian, there's a word I'm looking for, who really thought that society was going down because of a lack of God. And so they saw this lack of God as being the devil.
Oh,
you know, so if you believe in this heaven, there is a hell, right? And so if God is not, if the youth is going away from God, then that means the devil is entering society. And so they were trying to grasp at what could be happening. But so these deaths all take place in or very near Krugersdorp, South Africa. So from the bird's eye view, you know, far away view of Krugersdorp, it's beautiful. Actually, like I saw like some, you know, aerial shots of it. It looks like any city, you know, maybe small city, not huge. In Krugersdorp in Afrikaans is Krugerstown. So it's just, it's Afrikaans. But it looks like any other city. It was a mining city. It was established in 1887. They mined gold, manganese, iron, asbestos, and lime. So they're it's all mined in that area. Krugersdorp has a modern business center, shopping malls, smaller shops like everywhere else, schools, necessary amenities like everywhere else. It just, it's like a normal city. The demographics of Krugersdorp is about 50% white, 42% black African, with Afrikaans being spoken by about 42% of the population and English about 20%. Okay. And then there's a lot of the other languages that are found in Africa, just very small numbers, you know, 5% here and that kind of thing. The average salary a year is only about $189,000 rand, which is only about $10,000 dollars. Wow. But it looks like, I mean, I guess I guess the money goes a lot
farther
there. So it's kind of crazy. Not super rich people, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So during the early post-apartheid years, a lot of small churches began popping up to battle this insurgency of Satan and Satanists.
Okay.
They were popping up everywhere. They wanted to bring people back to God. So this is where Ria Grunewald comes into the story. So about 2006, she was a, maybe, so she said 2007 on the stand. But about 2006 is when Ria really, started to, find her way into this world.
Okay.
So she was a single mother of three who was a devout, what was the word I was looking for?
Devout.
She was a devout Christian who truly believed she could break people from the clutches of Satan and Satanism.
Okay.
So after attending a training with a friend of hers, she began her own little group based on these teachings.
Okay.
To really break people from the occult and from dark forces. And she called that group Overcomers Through Christ, or OTC for short.
Okay. Got it.
Ashley's really trying. I love
these acronyms because they're so like, they're crazy.
EPD, Electus Perdeus, OTC, Overcomers Through Christ.
Yeah, but then that long one for the task force. That... Yeah,
we're not even going to go back to that.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just...
There's a lot. So now you have these, you have Ria.
Yeah.
Overcomers Through Christ.
Yeah.
All right. And she was going to bring God to the masses and save those in the occult.
Okay. Got it.
There was just a lot of them. I don't know if there really was though. Just anyway, they really thought that there were going to be a lot. So she was ready. She was ready for battle. But she started to kind of collect people into this little church. And this was very like common. There's lots of these. Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a big church. It wasn't like she wasn't doing it to be Joel Osteen or anything, you know, to be whatever. She was just like, here are these people. We're going to do good things and we're going to save people one at a time. So then in walked Cecilia Stein, and she's saying this is about 2007.
Okay.
But she on the stand, she said 2007. She was a policeman's wife.
But not God's detective's wife, right?
Not God's detective wife.
How unfortunate for her.
His name is Dries or something like that. Dries Stein.
Sorry.
So no. So this is kind of where. So before we started recording, I wanted to be really careful not to, because this is where it starts. I just know that Ashley's reaction to what I'm about to say is going to be like laughter, and I'm going to try not to laugh. Because when
I'll be super serious.
So I'm going to just say this as fact, even though on the stand she denied she's ever said any of this.
Okay.
So this is what everyone else has said. She, Cecilia Stein, the policeman's wife, who was unemployed, who was 30 at the time.
Okay.
This is what she said to them, even though she's denied it on the stand, but she's a lying liar. Okay. She's a lying liar, and you're about to find out why.
Okay.
She claimed that
I can't even look at you.
I know. I don't look at me. Okay. So she claimed that she was a 42nd generational witch who is not only the daughter of Satan, but was married to him. She claimed even to have a marriage license that they both signed. I mean, I just have so many unanswered questions.
This was the woman married to the policeman, though?
Yes.
So is he Satan, or is she saying she's married to him and Satan?
So, no, he doesn't. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yes,
he is not a part of any of this. Okay. Allegedly. Okay. He had no idea what was being said to these people.
So she had two lives going on. One with Satan and one with policeman.
She was a mother of two in real life. And her kids saw a lot of what
were they
going
Satan's
to transpire.
Children or were they
I think they were Jesus' children.
Okay.
But I mean, like, did they go to like the court to sign the marriage license? I kind of feel like Satan wouldn't need a piece of paper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just your soul. Like,
yeah.
I just have so many questions. I have just so many questions.
Yeah.
And 42nd generational witch. It's so specific.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's just the beginning.
I'm sorry. I've just never heard anyone refer to like 42nd, like some crazy number generation, right? It's always like first, second, third. It's never like, I am 57th. Generation, which
you know, you can't claim that
my father is Satan,
but also my husband.
It's on my birth certificate and marriage certificate.
No, it's so weird. Okay, anyway, so she claimed to be a shapeshifter.
Oh, okay,
that she could astral travel into other people's dreams.
I wonder if she knew my former neighbor.
That she had a third eye and could read people's minds, and she always knew what people were thinking and knew all their deepest, darkest secrets.
Gross.
That she was a vampire and a werewolf. Not sure how that works. That the satanic cult was attacking her through astral travel, and that on high nights is what they called it, she would require someone to be there to pray over her while these demonic attacks happened. Sometimes they were by Satan himself. Sometimes they were by the satanic cult that she
married to Satan, why would the satanic cult and Satan be attacking her?
Because she's trying to get away. She's trying to go to God.
She's trying to divorce Satan.
She's trying to divorce Satan and marry Jesus.
Oh, all right.
Then. I don't know if she wants to really marry Jesus, but this is her story, right? She comes into this woman's life.
I just want to say, Rhea. Someone ever said to me that they were a witch, a vampire, a shapeshifter, a werewolf, also married to Satan. Like, I don't know that I would be able to, like, believe anything they said.
But that's why I'm saying you have to look at it from, and that's why it was really hard to say all of that, because it's like, what? And
there is no perspective where I could look at that objectively and be like, this woman needs protecting. That woman needs a mental asylum.
So we can, as outsiders, yes, I don't want to make fun of the people who fell into her world. Right. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But it is really hard. It is. It's real. And I told you this. It's really hard.
Yeah, but when you told me that, I didn't realize that's. I didn't realize it was that ridiculous. Normally, I'm all against
shit.
Against victim blaming. But these people heard her literally say out loud.
Out loud.
with a straight face that she was married to Satan, a 42nd generation witch, vampire, all those other things, and believed her.
So, okay.
I just find it a little much.
One of the detectives, I'm totally skipping ahead. Okay. One of the detectives was like, so I hear that you can shapeshift. And she's like, yeah. And she was like, okay, let me handcuff you and you can shapeshift into a bird and get out of the handcuffs. So she handcuffs her.
If you tell me this woman turned into a bird. I feel like you should have led with that.
This woman got up. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. This woman got up onto the back of her couch and just started going tweet, 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 tweet.
Did this really happen? And she was a cult leader.
Yes! I'm trying to be serious here.
Okay. Sorry.
So she says, get off that couch. You look ridiculous.
I like this woman. I like the police officer.
Oh, God. Okay. Oh, Suzette Canonza, you're amazing. Okay. Oh, my God. I'm just dying. I'm just dying right now.
Okay.
So, as I said, so on these high nights when the satanic cult or Satan was attacking her through astral travel, these are the nights that her it's my kid right here.
No, your cat.
Okay.
Your
cat. So those all happened to be the nights that her husband worked late.
Okay.
So great. So he was never in the house when any of her kids sometimes were.
Okay.
She would have Cecilia would have Rhea record these nights.
Okay.
And it would be like any other, say, you know, demonic possession, any other exorcism where you're writhing and screaming and your voice gets really low. Let me alone. Like she's doing all of that. She was committed to that character.
Yeah.
She all of a sudden would start spitting up blood.
Oh.
I found out through another thing, someone who made a podcast about her time with being friends, like best friends with Cecilia, that she saw her filling these little bubbles with her own blood.
She was a vampire.
With her own blood and keep it in her mouth to bite, to break it, and then she would spit up her own blood.
Her friend never thought to maybe like
mention people.
Hey,
she stopped being friends with her and didn't real, you know, she was kind of afraid of her too.
I mean, I would be afraid of this woman too, but anyway,
she sorry would say, I can come into your dreams and I can hurt you. And she did lots of really crazy things to the people who
she
trusted and you know, trusted her and stuff. Yeah. She's really crazy. So on these high nights, she'd spit up blood, scream, growl, writhe all over the place. And then all of a sudden she'd be like calm, cool, and her heart rate would go down. Like she was really in control. She collected books on all the cult leaders and took notes, like would write, oh, I'm going to do this. Like, oh, that's a good idea. So she was just making shit up.
Yeah.
Right? Clearly. So like, clearly she was just like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And none of it had anything to do with the occult. Like, that's the crazy thing. She was just like, oh, let me Google, what do Satanists do? You know, and like, that was her playbook.
Got it.
So she convinced Rhea. She convinced Rhea Grunewald, the head of OTC, that she needed constant prayer. She could not be left alone. She also said that she had 100 different personalities. And so she really couldn't be left alone. And so Rhea had to take care of her, had to really take care of her.
And her husband never asked why.
And her husband never, I mean, I'm sure he did, and I'm sure he was in on it, but we'll get to that. So Rhea believed her, promised to help get her out of that situation with the occult and the Satanists. And she continued praying for her. And Cecilia also claimed, like I said, to have 100 different personalities, including a 3-year-old girl. This shit's fucked up. She would make Rhea play with her, take her to the park, would hold her in her lap, and feed her a bottle with formula to help her go take a nap.
That is
some
commitment.
That is some fucked up character commitment. That is being all in. That's some crazy, the method acting, man.
Ooh. Was she getting like any kind of money for this, or she was just getting attention?
So, yes. So she was, because as things got a little bit hairy, I mean, Rhea's mentor was sounding the alarm, telling her, you're being isolated. This is not right. Like, you need to be. And she's like, no, God put her in my life. I need to save her. God is telling me I need to save this woman from the Satanists. And, you know, but this man's like, she seems dangerous. There's only one way this can go. Someone who's isolating you this much, someone who's got this crazy ass story that doesn't even sound right, someone who's doing all of these things, she's getting way more like addicted and controlling of you, and people are gonna die. People will lose their lives.
At least someone had a level head, even if it didn't ring, and
right,
like, even if no one else listened, at least somebody was like, this is wrong.
So like, this went on for years. Okay, years. So this guy who was her mentor and teacher said, You can't teach what I taught you anymore. Do not associate with what my church does. You are not a part of this. Wow. So she separated. She still kept OTC, but it was now all about Cecilia Stein. And she needed help. She couldn't be the only, she still had a job. She was a financial planner. She still had to work. Yeah. Like, she was not dumb.
Yeah.
Right. And so she brought in people, and they were with her around the clock, and they were responsible to basically, they supported her. Any earthly need she could possibly have, they gave it to her. So she was benefiting monetarily right away from these people. They weren't exactly giving her money just yet, but they were paying for everything. Yeah. Right. And so as those people started coming in, she was into this very special circle of the people she trusted to help take care of Cecilia. They started to become really enchanted with her. I mean, she was a 42nd generational witch.
Yeah.
Whoa. Right. Yeah. Like, wow. Married to Satan.
I know.
Wow. Right. And so Rhea and Cecilia, based on what Cecilia quote unquote knew about Satan and the Satanic Church or Satanism, mm-hmm. they wrote a manual called Know Your Enemy.
Oh.
And so they started to focus less on God and more about teaching them what Satanism was about, like based on what Cecilia thought it meant. Like, we're going to really...
I can't imagine that would go well in divorce court. See, like you wrote a book calling him a piece of shit. Like,
know your enemy. And so everybody's like, okay, so we're going to start to know your enemy. And say, this is how you fight Satanism. You got to learn everything about it. You got to basically... Now we're going to wear all black now. We're going to all dye our hair black. And we're going to be goth. And we're going to just... This is now. And then it's like, wait, we were just... godly people, and now we're following because this 42nd generational witch wears all black and dyes her hair black and all of those things, like we're all gonna do that too. So they just started to fall in line. So Rhea started to see the cracks. She started to feel what was being said. She just started to see the cracks in her character, started to see the cracks in her story. So she tried to cut ties. She started to back up, and Cecilia saw that she was trying to cut ties and back up. And so one day she was over at Cecilia's house. Cecilia gave her a juice, which she drugged, knocked her out. And in that time, she went into her computer, went onto her phone, found everything out about her. And then after it was all said and done and Rhea woke up, she was like, Satanists astral traveled and drugged your juice, and now we know everything about you, even your deepest darkest secrets, because she spent hours going through her phone, and like she knew all of her darkest secrets, you know, whatever. She was like, now we know everything about you. She believed it. She really believed that the Satanist did this. She could not bring herself to think that this woman who she bottle fed in the park could do that to her.
Yeah.
You know, that Mama Rhea was...
Oh, I wonder what her deep, dark secrets were.
I mean, I don't think they were much. Yeah. You know what I mean? She was a...
That's what I'm saying. Like, I wonder what was so bad she was afraid, like...
I don't think that there was so much... It was so much about what she knew that she really believed that they knew everything about her.
Yeah.
She was told that we know your thoughts, so careful what you think.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so she was like, oh, God, did I think something bad? And so it got to be... I mean, that is stress.
Yeah.
So, on July 2nd, 2012... After Rhea has like, that's it. I told Cecilia I want nothing to do with her. I'm leaving. That was the last time I ever saw her. And that was it. So on July 2nd, 2012, the remaining members, and it's kind of like a divorce. Let me go back a little bit. It's kind of like a divorce, you know, like when one person is divorced and you have some people trying to stay with one side of the couple and some of the friends stay with the other side of the couple and some kind of try to be, well, you're both my friends, you know, that kind of in the middle. And that's totally, they try to stay in contact with both, but it got to be really difficult because Cecilia had decided that Rhea was the enemy and she was going to make her hurt for leaving her. It seemed like she wanted Rhea back, so she used the Satanists as cover. Like, let's attack her to make her so scared that she comes back to take care of me.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And we kind of mentioned this offline that this particular cult leader is so different. And in the Queen Havoc and her murder cult, in the very last episode that came out today, they actually say, like, is it because she's a woman that it's so different? Because she always portrays herself. She's this 42nd generation witch. She can do all this fucking shit. She's a vampire, werewolf, astral travel expert, all of the shapeshifter, all of these things. But she's so vulnerable and she's so weak and she needs to be protected and you need to protect her. You need to take care of her. She needs you to pray over her and to protect her and provide for every worldly desire. It's so strange that it's not the Messiah. It's not the second coming of Christ up in here who's just the best thing since sliced bread and we should all be listening. She's not that.
Yeah.
She's just this weak, damaged, hurting person who needs protecting. It's really, really different. Anyway, so she left Cecilia. She is now the enemy.
So she left even after
being drugged, even after she's like, that's it, I'm done.
Okay.
And so she goes back to her mentor, her friend. She's like, I'm going back to God. I'm going to go back to teaching God. Cause he's like, you've forgotten all about God.
Yeah.
This isn't even what you're teaching anymore. And so she's like, you know what? You're right. So this is what she went back to. So on July 2nd, 2012, the remaining members of OTC that stayed with Cecilia, she named them Electus Perdeus, chosen by God, to distance themselves from the OTC. This group was made up of Miranda Stein, no relation. She actually changed her name back to her maiden name, which was Stein, to be the same as Cecilia.
Wow.
Her two children, LaRue and Marcel, who were very young at this point, 10 and 12, I think, maybe 12 and 14. And then Zach and Michaela Valentine, a married couple that were in their mid-20s. So those are the people that stuck with Cecilia. There's also Candace, who was friends with Cecilia, but she doesn't really come in to play a whole lot. But she does also have a podcast, which is worth listening to, I guess, if you're interested in learning about a friend. She talks about astral travel and all that kind of stuff. It's really weird. So on July 2nd, 2012, they placed homemade bombs under the cars of people attending an OTC course, but were nearly spotted before they could ignite the explosives. So they were unsuccessful. The police came out, disarmed the bombs, and that didn't happen. So it freaked freaked Rhea out, right? Absolutely freaked yeah. her out. They didn't get caught, but they were like, oh, this is bad. Later that month, a group started a fire and damaged windows at the Lighthouse Christian Center in Ramburg. This was her mentor's church. Okay. And a note what was written by Cecilia in big block letters that says, Rhea, who's going to protect you now?
Oh, damn.
Damn. Right? In July and August, various threats were sent by text to different OTC members and other people associated with Rhea. And then on July 11th of... So actually that was the first thing. So on July 11th, Cecilia and her accomplices successfully set off explosives near the cars at an OTC meeting. So that was the first time. Then on the next day, it was the unsuccessful explosions. So Rhea thought like, okay, we're going to have one more meeting. It's going to be top secret. Don't tell anybody. We're going to meet at a different place. We're going to just disband after this. This is one last meeting. That's it. But it was their, you know, then the church blew up. They burned it down. That was when that note, who's going to protect you now, came out. So that was the end of OTC. As Cecilia became more obsessed with executing revenge on Rhea, she falsely accused Natasha Berger, an active member of OTC, of praying the so-called danger prayer that led to the deaths of various young children. So this is sort of where Cecilia starts to bring in this idea that there are children who are orphaned. She's going by C now at this point. Oh. There are children who are orphaned by Satanists who were sacrificed. So they were left to fend for themselves. So there's this secret orphanage in a location that's secret that only Cecilia knows how to get in touch with them. And we need to support the orphanage. So it's really hard to explain all that. It's so twisty and topsy turvy, right?
It's so just fucking ridiculous.
So
like, as you, the more you say about her, the more I'm like, is this even a real story? Are you just fucking with everyone right now? Like is this a real story?
No, it's fucking real. Okay. It's fucking real. Okay. So then they started to give her money to support this orphanage, and they would,
without ever seeing it, without having any proof of it, right? Like just giving her the money, right? I just want to make sure I understand. Like
straight into her bank account.
Okay.
Fucking crazy, right? Okay. So Natasha is so-called death prayer, death praying, all this stuff. So she convinced Zach and Michaela Valentine to kill Natasha. Nat. So on July 26th of 2012, this is all very quick in succession, right? The Valentines entered the home of her neighbor, this elderly woman, a neighbor named Jo Bunzer. Ooh, butchered that. Sorry, Joy. A close friend of Nat's, and made her... So they knew she was at work. And so they knew Nat was at work. So they go and they knock on Joy's door and they say, hey, we're here to surprise her. Can we just stay here until she's back from work? And she's like, oh, sure. Come on in. Just sweet old lady. And then right away, they're there for business. And they're like, you're going to write a note saying you need to come to my flat right now. Please come to my flat. Nat, honey, please come to my flat when you get home from work. Auntie Joy, something like that. And then they killed her.
Oh my God.
Did she put up a fight?
Did that wasn't part of the plan. Like, C didn't tell them to kill anyone else, right? Just kill Natasha. Or did she say, do whatever you have to do to like kill Natasha?
Can't leave a witness.
Okay, well, I was just asking, what she told him. You know what I mean?
Right. He slit her throat. So Michaela went to go put the note on Nat's door, came back and saw blood everywhere. And she was like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck did you do, Zach? Right?
Yeah.
So she knows that this is not good, whatever's happened. So then Berger arrives home, sees the note. She walks in. She knows, too, that there are people after her, that there are people after Rhea and OTC, not necessarily her, but they know that there's been all these bombings. And so this is not far after all of those things, right?
Yeah.
This is a week and a half, right? So she goes, she sees this note. She's like, something's not right. And then she goes next door and she puts up a fight, but loses it against Zach. Very, very sad. Stabbed to death. So the first thing they did was scare Rhea, right, with a bunch of bombs.
Yeah.
Or attempted bombs, right? Meeting at a lunar location. Rhea was just terrified. All of this, she thinks it's just a Satanist. She's not putting it together yet. She's just really, really, really not putting it together.
I mean, to be fair, it doesn't sound like something a weak woman would be doing.
Right, right. But she's also being questioned. What is happening with you, Rhea? Are you the one doing all of this? Right? So she's under suspicion too. These are her people.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense why she's under suspicion, but she's still under suspicion. She's not, she can't prove otherwise at this point, you know?
Yeah.
She doesn't have anyone else to blame except for Satanists.
Yeah.
So it's just like it's awful.
Yeah.
So the next victim was Reginald John Edwin Bendixson. So he is the friend and mentor of Rhea. And he regularly presented lectures to the OTC. So Rhea regarded Bendixson as her mentor. And Cecilia, once again, vengeful, and after the disintegration of her and Rhea's relationship, began planning to kill him. So on October 13th, 2012, Zach Valentine and Miranda Stein, again, she changed her name to be that of Cecilia. It's crazy. They were disguised as police officers and entered Bendixson's home and attacked him with a hand axe. He died after being stabbed multiple times. Miranda Stein would later in court describe her first murder as exciting and an adrenaline rush. So at this point, Michaela Valentine had become totally disillusioned with the group's activities and wanted out. She saw what was happening to her husband, and she's like, I just don't want any of this. This is not for me. I am not a killer. Because they were like, well, you're going to do the next killing, Michaela, because I need to know that you're in this. So to show your loyalty to Cecilia, you need to kill. You need to be a part of the crimes. You can't just be there.
So what was Cecilia's reason for making them kill? Like, they're saying the OTC people were Satanists now?
They're doing the death prayer. And, I mean, how they didn't see through any of it. It was like, oh, they're the enemy. Why? Why? They are using my Know Your Enemy pamphlet, just changing the words.
And these people were all followers of OTC, right?
At one point.
Okay.
Yes.
So they're killing people they knew and worshipped with and worked with.
Yes.
Wow.
So Michaela was trying to get out. She had a conversation with Cecilia, and she was like, I usually take Thursdays off of work so I can come and take care of you on Thursday. I won't be in tomorrow. I'm not going to be a part of this anymore. And she told Zach, like, I know that you're going to stay, and that's it. Like, we're done, right? Like, we're done. You're done with me, because this is where you want to be. And so it was just like, I need out. And so now she's a liability. And so Zach and Cecilia decided that she had to die. And so Zach Valentine ensured he had an alibi by going to work on the day of the murder, October 4th, 2012, before leaving the house, he put some tranquilizers in Michaela's coffee before he left. And she was like, oh, I'm getting really tired again. You know what? I'm going to go back to bed. I have nothing to do today. So I'm going to go back to bed. He had given Miranda a set of the house keys and the gate remote. So that Thursday morning, Miranda and her daughter, Marcel, who was 14 at this point, killed Michaela by smashing her skull with a blunt object and stabbing her several times as she lay on her bed. She was 25. And they made Marcel participate. Miranda made Marcel participate. She's like, you don't have to kill her, but you have to stab her. And then she did one stab and she was like, it won't go through. And she was like, that's okay, I'll do it. And then so her mom just fucking loved it. Killed her.
The fact that they thought they were doing this for any kind of good purpose is just bizarre to me.
The need to belong is so powerful. It's so powerful.
I guess.
And that is, it is, and maybe that's why cults fascinate me, but man, this is crazy. It's crazy level. It happens so fast.
Yeah.
So fast. Okay, so then Cecilia, then C. So C then planned to have Rhea's son Joshua murdered by the three men who were all asked to do it couldn't follow through, never carried it out. So he's still alive. He has no idea how close he was to death. Like, no idea. So after being dormant for a while, like just Perdea started running out of money. So can't have that. So Zach Valentine had already contributed 2 million rand at this point, which is about $100,000 of his own money to the orphanage. But Cecilia's apartment started looking really good after a while. She got a new TV, got a motorcycle, her husband wasn't going, what the fuck? Who are you robbing?
I mean, but the fact that her husband wasn't questioning why all these people were taking care of her or why all these murders were suddenly happening in really crazy fashions who just happened to be former friends of hers.
I'm just going to tell all of y'all right now, he is still a freaking cop. And it is
naturally,
it is so frustrating. He's the one character where I'm like, hello. And he's like, I didn't know what was happening. God, you should not be a cop then if you cannot fucking figure that shit out.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Zach quit his job. He started his own venture. Basically, he was borrowing money from his parents and from his in-laws. So the group believed that the money was needed for an orphanage run secretly by Cecilia. And though the orphanage never existed, they didn't care. So these children, again, were orphaned by sacrificed Satanists. Obviously, we need to take care of them. So Cecilia then devised a scheme to obtain money through insurance fraud, theft, and murder. Yeah. The group, believing they were committing these crimes for a good cause, participated in these crimes in good faith, right? Like, oh yeah, we're robbing and killing for orphans. Rob Peter.
None of them wanted to like take the orphans in. I'm like, hey, I'll adopt one of the orphans.
I mean, I don't know, because then Satan could find them astral travel and all that. I don't know. So John Barnard set up a meeting. John Barnard, I'm sorry, he was like their drug dealer. Ah, they were all taking drugs too.
Oh, okay.
Super fucking high.
Okay, that makes a little more sense.
It got to be more and more. Cecilia was always high. She was like rotting teeth and shit. It's like,
them being high all the time makes the story a little bit more believable.
Not all the time.
Yeah, but
it wasn't all the time. But the kids, in order to get through the murders, started to use a lot of drugs. And so it just like, you start to self-medicate your way through the stuff. And they had different names for these drugs. It wasn't like crack. It was kind of like a meth, like a South African meth, you know, and then it just teeth rotting and shit. So John Barnard was their dealer, and he kind of came into the fold. And so he set up a meeting between his employer, Peter Meyer, and group members to discuss a business venture. It was like a water park or some shit. Like, he needed investors, right? They were desperate for investors. It wasn't taking off. So although they had reservations about who John Barnard had set them up with, they still took the meeting. And they were so buffoonish. They would show up the day before the scheduled meeting. And then, you know, the son would be like, he's not here. The meeting is tomorrow. And like, they would show up during dinner. It's like, can you come back later? You know, like, they were trying to catch him off guard and they never could. So they just had to show up at the fucking meeting time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
it was just, they're so buffoonish. Anyway, one of the brothers, one of the sons of this couple actually was a part of this and told them like where money would be hidden, and actually got his brother, the one that was the one saying they're not here, but the meeting is tomorrow. That guy, he said, hey, come out for a drink with me. And his brother was like, sure. So he wasn't in the house when all of this went down. And so when Miranda and the group showed up and killed both he and his wife, that was really sad. So, but actually Peter had called a friend of his and said, hey, can you come? Because these guys are kind of sketching me out. Can you come and be here? He was like, yeah, I'm going to be a little late, but I'll be there. And he showed up just after they were killed and was nobody answered the door. So he left. Holy shit. Right. So on November 27th, 2015.
So wait, he said, can you come to my house? These people are meeting me here. It's a little sketchy. He rings the doorbell. No one answers. And he just leaves. He's not like, maybe something happened.
All right. I mean, they were found right away. So November 27th, Zach Valentine, Miranda, and Marcel arrived at the Myers home, tied him and his wife up, and demanded money. But they didn't have a lot of money. So they were stabbed to death. I mean, it was just like hundreds of dollars, $300 or something like that.
Yeah.
So then they were like, okay, that was dumb. That's not going to get us a lot of money. We need a better plan. So they decided they needed to fake Zach's death to get his insurance money.
Oh.
So he got a new insurance policy. not suspicious at all. They befriended a homeless street vendor by the name of Jared Jackson, and they brought him into the fold slowly. So they kind of knew this is where they were going. They kind of brought him in. He had a pregnant partner. They allowed them to sleep in the shed to not arise, not to make people suspicious of like a homeless couple living, on the shed. So they were kind of like, keep out of sight. They'd pay him a few bucks to run errands for them, but they were heroin addicts. Anyway, so on December 16th, 2015, Jackson, together with John Barnard, Miranda, and LaRue Stein, left for the Free State. I'm not sure what that means. I don't know where that is. I'm sorry. And they were in two cars, one being Zach's car, and then there was the other car. So on the way, LaRue and Zach got some drinks, and John Barnard, oh yeah, I'll have some juice. And so they put stuff in the juice, they drugged him, and then they put him in the passenger seat, and so LaRue ended up with a tie and strangled him. They strangled him on the way. So once he was dead, they pulled over, placed Jackson in the driver's seat, and lit the car on fire. And then the following day, Miranda identified Jackson's charred body as that of Zach Valentine. Zach went into hiding. He was living out of a hotel room. They got his death certificate to secure insurance payout, and Cecilia was the main beneficiary. So Miranda's son, LaRue, called, and there's recordings. This is why you should listen to Queen Havoc. There's recordings. Yeah, I need to talk about a claim. My best friend just died. And like, it actually sounds like real tears crying. Like, he sounds like it's really,
yeah.
Like, he sounded very honest. And it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like, yeah, but my mom or my mom's friend is the beneficiary, and what should she do? And so you hear the lady talking on the phone to him just to get the ball rolling, but it's really fucking suspicious. So the cops, notoriously horrible at all, and horrible at investigating any of these crimes, and there's so many.
There's a cop living in the household and doesn't even know what's happening. So,
and
not surprising.
Things are just being just fumbled every single which way. And I mean, they had Miranda Stein in police custody three times before it stuck, horrible, horrible investigating. But the insurance people did good investigating. So there's
of course they did.
There's audio and visual, but on the podcast, there's audio of them going to Cecilia's house to talk to her about this insurance claim.
Yeah.
And so she was like, well, yeah, I was the beneficiary even when he was married. And she kind of brags about that. And he was like, that's a weird thing to say. Well, no, I'm just, he's like, no, well then tell me about that. Why would you even bring that up? Why are you bragging? I mean, you can listen to it. It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing stuff. Anyway, so using a fake ID, Zach Valentine then booked himself into the Herberg Hotel in Krugersdorp as Jacques Devier.
Okay.
You're welcome for that. All right. So he hid there until April of 2016 before moving to Kia Kaha Ministries in Krugersdorp. But the wife, give it up for the wives, the wife of a Krugersdorp cop recognized Zach from a bulletin that her husband had and had brought home. And she was like, God, that guy looks really familiar. So she gets home and she looks at it. She goes, that's him. So they told her, take pictures. And if you can see his tattoos, because they knew what his tattoos looked like, if you can get him with his tattoos on, you know, then we'll know we have him for sure. And
wait, so why did they have a bulletin for him if they thought he was dead?
They didn't.
Point, no one point, thought he was actually dead at this point.
Because they were like, this. So the insurance company was like, this isn't right.
Okay.
So the payout wasn't happening. It was taking a long time.
Yeah.
And they're like, what's happening? And he's a liability really at this point because Zach was diabetic and they were having to pay for his insulin and his food at this hotel and all of this is being paid for and they're running out of money.
Yeah.
So now like he's probably going to die.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, that makes
sense. So this woman, this wife is, you know, she's a volunteer at this ministries thing, you know, they're all swimming and whatever. And so she's like kind of on the DL taking photos of Zach without a shirt on. So she takes it back and they're like, that's him. So on June 26, 2016, they had him. They arrested Zach Valentine. Boom. So that's, I sort of like got you to the end of the story because I was like, you know,
okay.
But they embarked on a series of what was called, they dubbed it the appointment murder. So like they would set up appointments with an identified victim under false pretenses. So this is, in these cases, it was usually a financial planner or a tax guy. So this is all like after they killed, the homeless guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they get like a financial planner or tax guy, but like this similar to making an appointment with a realtor. And we were saying like, these appointments are super dangerous.
Yeah.
Right. So these are people just trying to do a job, people, but they're going to do a job anywhere. You need to meet me somewhere. You need me to come to your house. You need, you know, like you're going to go do your job like that.
Yeah.
You know, gig economy. That's what you do. So, it didn't always take place in an office. It's dangerous stuff. So Miranda LaRue and John Barnard would typically intimidate the victims into handing over their bank cards. They would hand it over, they would get the PIN, and then kill them anyway. wasn't very fortuitous because they weren't exactly robbing rich people.
Yeah,
like they had a couple thousand dollars, couple hundred dollars, not a lot of money.
Yeah.
Anyway, once they got their PIN, they would be murdered. So the first victim was Glenn McGregor, 57, a tax consultant. And Miranda, Marcel LaRue, and John Barnard met McGregor at his home on January 27th, 2016, shot him and forced him to transfer 6,000 Rand into Miranda's account. Then they shot him. And that money went directly to Cecilia also at that point. The group's next victim was Anthony Schofield, 67, a tax consultant. The foursome lured Schofield to their flat in Krugersdorp and forced him at gunpoint to hand over his bank cards and pens. And they withdrew $16,600 or about $800 in today's U.S. dollars. Not much. From his accounts and used his cards at various shops in Krugersdorp. They took out money. There's ATM cameras. This was part of their downfall. Schofield was eventually strangled and placed in the boot of his car in the trunk. They called it the boot.
Yeah.
Which was then abandoned. They were hoping someone would steal the car, but no one did. They found it. Similarly, oh, I hate that word. Kevin McAlpine, 29, was lured to their Krugersdorp flat on May 26, 2016, and forced to hand over his bank cards. Only 1,300 Rand was withdrawn from his accounts. Pfft, nothing.
Yeah.
And so he was strangled and left in the boot of his car. Trunk. A few days later, May 30th, a state agent, so realtor Hanley Ladigan, 52, was lured to a flat under the pretense of a business meeting with a client. She was similarly threatened, and 3,000 Rand was withdrawn from her account. Police had, these deaths were on TV. And so
they were on TV.
Like, it was all about, like, I mean, people were dying.
Oh, you mean on appointments. They were really talking about it.
Okay,
I thought you meant
that's what they were calling it, the appointment murders.
Yeah.
Right. And so she was like, oh shit, I got an appointment. What are you going to do? Stop working? You got to make money.
Yeah.
Right. So she had, if I don't call you in 10 minutes, you come and find me. This is where I am. This is what I'm doing. This is where I'm going. This is all this stuff. But they treated her a little differently. They kept her alive. They didn't keep her near her car. Then they, you know, so there was all these things. So they placed her body in Miranda's car and dumped her body near a cemetery where it was discovered the following day.
These are really back-to-back murders, huh? Like every other day, right?
All within, gosh, yeah. So no, January 2017, 27th, then it was May 26th, then May 30th. So yeah, those two were back to back. So the West Rand-based publication Window News put the timeline of the murders. So I'll just kind of names and dates. So July 2012 was Natasha Berger and her neighbor Joy. Natasha was 31, Joy 68. August of 2012, Pastor Reg Ben Dixon. October 2012, Michaela Valentine. November 2015, Peter and Joan Meyer. Peter was 52, Joan Meyer was 48. December 2015, Jared Jackson, who was 44. He was the homeless man who was said to have been Zach. January 2016, Glenn McGregor, 57. May 2016, Anthony Schofield, 64. May 2016, Kevin McAlpine, 29. May 2016, Hanley Ladigan, 52. So those three did happen in May.
It's a lot of murders in general.
11.
Yeah.
20 weeks after Hanley's murder, Miranda's children, 20-year-old LaRue and 18-year-old Marcel, were arrested based on the video camera footage at the ATM.
Damn, they were in that for a long time.
Yes. Wow. Yes. And they were afraid.
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, as kids growing up in that, they would be afraid.
They really believed, they 100% believed that they could be taken in their sleep by astral projection.
Yeah.
And they were terrified. So after intense interrogation, they confessed to the crimes. Not necessarily. LaRue did. And there's a really good part of Queen Havoc and a Murder Cult where it's you're hearing from the detective who really just, gosh, he almost died investigating this. Just it put so much stress on him. But he, when they finally got Miranda, because she was a hard one to get.
Yeah.
When they finally got Miranda, she was a teacher. She was a high school teacher.
Oh my God.
And they went to her classroom and they were like, something has got to be here. And it was an old home ec classroom that had ovens still. So they opened up the ovens and there was like guns and ammunition and all this shit in the school. So then at that point, one of the office workers was like, she just changed her will. And the detective asked, can I see it? I mean, I can do all the paperwork. And they're like, no, we'll give it to you. And we'll even sign that we're doing it by our own free will.
Yeah.
So they gave it to him. She denounced. She just let her children go. I don't care if they're alive or dead. They don't get anything from me. Everything goes to Cecilia Stein. If she wants to give them money, that's fine. But I'm disowning them.
Oh my God.
So the detective goes to the jail to talk to LaRue. Like, he could see that she was, that he was, he could see that he was like a hurting child in there.
Yeah.
Like, there's still a boy in there. And he said, "This is how much your mom loved you," and handed him the new will. And he was like, "Fuck that bitch. I'm turning."
I bet.
And so he did. And so he gave a lot of, but here's a part. Remember all those 2012 crimes? No one could find those files. No one could find any file of any crime that this group committed from 2012. So this detective had to start from the beginning. And LaRue gave him all of these things, confessed, gave him all these details. He needed to corroborate it. And he didn't have those. He didn't have that evidence because it all just disappeared.
Shocking.
The colonel, DeJager, Colonel DeJager, who was the colonel at the time, he was unceremoniously fired, you know, like discharged. And they, so he's, he has, he runs a church of his own now.
Of course. Naturally.
Naturally. Anyway, he was friends with Cecilia, which is why there was no good police activity happening at the time. He was friends with her.
Oh God.
He was probably getting money too.
So frustrating.
It's also frustrating. So, LaRue confessed, Zach, Cecilia, Miranda, and John were all detained within the following, with the following weeks. Marcel, was taking the rap. She was saying that she was responsible, that they did it. Nobody told her to, that kind of thing. She was taking the fall, and they were like, it's not possible. You could not have done this.
Yeah.
Like, you're a child, you know, you could not have done this. So after a series of court proceedings that opened a Pandora's box for the revelation of the heinous crimes that were committed by the group, the court finally delivered judgment on the suspects. And I'm totally fast forwarding through this, and I know like the court proceedings are so important, but oh my gosh, you just need to see her on the stand. Hearing her audio just doesn't do it.
Yeah.
You need to see her. She's so confident and so under control. But she couldn't ever answer the prosecutor's questions. She would look at them while they asked it and then look somewhere else when she answered it, and then look at them while they asked the next question and then look somewhere else. It was interesting, like, oh, body language wise, like, yeah, you could see like calm, cool, and collected. And I'm looking at you while you ask this question. She'll be like, no, I didn't say that. You know, her eyes just would shift. No, I didn't say that. I don't know why they said that. Weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, never, she couldn't, like, I'm meeting your eyes right now. She could not do that. So really,
did Zach's wife get in any trouble since she got out?
They killed her.
Oh, that's right. My bad. Sorry. Just kidding. JK. Yeah.
On her day off.
Damn. Yeah.
On her day fucking off. She's 25.
I've tried to block out sections of this story. I'm sorry.
Okay. So on the 19th of August, 2019, three members of the Electus Per Deus, which means chosen by God, were found guilty and given multiple life sentences. So Cecilia Stein, the mastermind of the killings, received 13 life sentences plus 155 years imprisonment after being convicted on the 11 counts of murder, even though she did not commit them, but she orchestrated them. On top of it, this mother of two was found guilty of robbery, illegal weapons possessions, and insurance fraud. So she's up for parole in 2044. She won't get it.
Yeah.
Miranda Stein, LaRue and Marcel's mama and former school teacher, is serving 11 life terms and 115 years in prison. She has no regrets. In fact, she wishes she had married Cecilia. She was the perfect person.
Wow. Zach, that is dedication.
But she was like, but that would be like incest. And she just goes on and on about how great. She was like, she's like a sister or something. But she's just the perfect person. And I wish it had worked out that we were the ones that got married. Ugh. Zach Valentine was sentenced to 8 life sentences and 93 years imprisonment. I will say this, that during the testimony, when Cecilia was up on the stand, they were kind of making light of it. Like, he just scooted farther and farther down the bench to where he was sitting like on one butt cheek just to get as far away from her as possible. Like at first they were kind of all chummy and laughing and joking in court, but as it started to become clearer and clearer how much they were taken for a ride by Cecilia, they were like, what the fuck? And they just started to, I mean, she was all by herself.
Yeah.
All by herself. And she's an interesting looking person. I know people are probably already looking her up. She was really thin when Rhea met her, and then she just got she was really unhealthy. She started to lose her hair, and then she had like a buzz cut, like a flat top, but she was bald on top. But she had a flat top to hide the baldness, I guess. It was weird. And then it was dyed black. It was very strange. She was very masculine looking. She dressed very masculine. She presented masculine.
Oh, yeah. I see her picture.
Right. And so, you know, there was an interview with her parents in a book by a journalist named Yana Marks. And it was like the amount of denial that her mom is living in. You know, her dad was like, well, she's a lesbian. No, she's not. And it's like, dude, she had affairs with her friends. Yes, she was a lesbian.
Their eyes look insane.
So that's Michaela, the one that they killed, is on the right. And Zach is the guy. Miranda is in the middle. And Cecilia is on the left. And that's
God, they look crazy.
Mm-hmm. Because they had to wear those white contacts wearing all black. This is like, they had to have tattoos. Cecilia made them get tattoos. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So Zach Valentine. So John Barnard, he turned state's witness as well. And he's serving 20 years after striking that plea deal. Marcel Stein was sentenced to 15 years in jail for the murder she committed before turning 18 and life for those she committed when she became an adult, which means that she must serve 7 life terms. She tried to say that she was a kid and all these things. And then the judge was like, you had so many opportunities. We gave you so many. She was a really good student. She was in school every day. There's never an alarm raised or anything like that. She's like, they're like, you had so many opportunities to cry for help. And as many times as we try to get you to turn, you know, like you didn't. And it's now that you're getting sentenced, now you're asking for leniency.
Yeah.
You know, she did find her voice, but a little too late. She did apologize. She said she was so sorry. I'm so sorry. But, you know, she's going to spend the rest of her life in jail. LaRue Stein is serving 35 years after he entered into a plea bargain as well with the state. 10 years of his sentence was suspended on the condition that he testify at trial, which he did. So he will be released in 2039. So honestly, like, I'll repeat this. Please go and listen to Queen Havoc and her murder call. It's so worth it because I only cover like a snippet of the craziness. You can actually, and then like if you go to YouTube, you can actually see testimony, see Cecilia on the stand, see her lies, and just her like, whatever, I never said that. No, I never told them I could astral travel. No, I never told them I had a third eye. No, I never told them I was a 42nd generational witch. She says, they're asking her all of this, and you're just like, oh my gosh. You know, all these people cannot be liars. You know, Rhea actually testified. She's changed her name. She lives somewhere else. She's basically like in the witness protection program, but her kids don't talk to her. She doesn't have anybody. And she, when she got on the stand, she says Rhea Grunewald is dead. And that was the last time she ever made a public statement, really, ever, was during that trial. So you can see some testimony on YouTube. There's just a lot out there on this case. Not a whole lot of it is accessible, like that documentary called Devil's Dorp that's only available on Showmax. So if you have VPN, go find it. I don't have it. And it's Kurt Kubicek is the director, producer, writer, podcast host of Queen Havoc and her murder cult, which I, again, highly recommend. And it's, so that is my story. I know it was a really long one.
That was so crazy.
So crazy. So crazy.
I don't know. I'm going to follow that up.
next week. You always say that and then you just do a badass story. So it's, you know, don't worry about it. But this one was like, it was so big. And I'm like, I am just going to have to cut out so much and just get through. But yeah, there's a lot out there. So definitely go check out Queen Havoc.
I don't know. I'm still stuck on the shape shifting and vampire. Cause you know, when my house flooded and I had to stay in Kima, the weird guy next door said that he too was a shapeshifter and could travel and was getting his own show on, oh my gosh, whatever channel Baggins comes on.
Oh,
Bagel Bites comes on.
On Discovery?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And he just needed to get his entertainment lawyer so they could have the meeting, because they wouldn't have the meeting with him. But when they saw the video, because he recorded himself shapeshifting, but his phone was dead and he couldn't show me the videos ever. And he could see dead people. And his wife framed him, which is why he had gone to prison, because she was scared of him because he could shapeshift. Oh, and all God. Of these other weird things. So I wonder if they maybe he would have fit right in with the cult.
Oh, my God.
I don't know whatever happened to him. He went to a funeral one day and then just never came back.
Listen. I laughed my ass off when she's like, okay, I'm going to put you in handcuffs and I want you to turn into a bird and get out of my handcuffs. And then she jumps on the back of her couch and just starts tweeting like a fucking bird. Is there a video of that?
I really want to see it.
I don't think so. This is just that detective telling the story. And she was like, I was like, what? I'm listening to it in the car driving, just laughing so hard. Yeah. And she's like, get down. You look like an idiot. You're still a human. Like, God. Like, she knew. I mean, she wasn't going to believe it, you know, but yeah. She was like, okay.
At least she stayed committed to the character is all I have to say.
I mean, that's some amazing character work. That's some... just staying in character.
Well, that was all the time. Great story.
And I didn't want to make light of
those people are fucking idiots.
They killed people, and so I don't. But at the same time,
I feel bad for the people they killed. 1,000%. I feel bad for those people. I feel bad for those people's families.
I feel bad for the two kids
and for the kids,
because then they
were brought into it without asking. But the people that listened to this woman say all of that ridiculous stuff and be like, this is who I want to follow and give all my money to and kill people for. Like, what the fuck?
It doesn't.
It's not like a traditional cult where they're like, not. I'm from God, or I'm, you know, God's create. Like, you know, I'm.
Kill yourselves. Yeah. Don't kill other people.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Don't.
She wasn't even pretending to be anyone great. She.
No, and that's the thing. And that's, she wasn't.
And that's what blows my mind, that these people just so willingly were like, yeah, we'll do whatever she says. Like, it's just crazy. To me, it's crazy.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked to enough survivors of cults,
yeah,
you know, to say, like, especially, I mean, they were children. They didn't have a choice.
Right.
There is, however, a moment in your life when you are an adult, and that isn't a good excuse anymore.
Yeah.
And as much as they believed her, you know, they ignored their own, and they were also drug induced. Yeah. They were just,
I don't blame the children at all.
There's so many drugs involved. And it's, I don't either there, but there's an argument to be made that you can't use that excuse while brutally murdering people by wielding a hammer, a hatchet, a knife, a gun, and killing people senselessly.
Yeah.
You know, like they even got like pig heads to practice stabbing so that it wouldn't feel weird.
Yeah.
Which they made Michaela do so that she could stab people, because she was like, I don't want to kill people. And so they were like, you're gonna have to kill people or you're a liability. And she just couldn't.
Yeah.
And so she's dead. And then Marcel was like, I can't do it. And her mom's like, it's okay, you don't have to kill her, just stick it in her, you know. And so her mom did it all and liked it. And there's like blood everywhere. I mean, that little girl is just broken on the inside, you know. It's awful that there, you can't show her mercy in a court of law after she did all that. You just can't.
Yeah.
She didn't turn until the very end. You know, she just can't. You can't.
It's really crazy when we think about like the other female led cult you talked about in this one and how different they are from the other types of cults out there. Mm-hmm. It's just really different when there's a female cult leader. I feel like the overall guidance of the cult, the purpose, the things that happen is just so weird and different. Like,
yeah. Or like they're just taking things that are so disparate, like, and just what does that have to do with this? And it doesn't seem organized. Not to say that women aren't organized, but it seems less.
I'm just saying the
organized
cults that are women led versus the ones that are men led are so drastically different. It's crazy. It's fascinating.
Fascinating.
I should say not crazy. It's fascinating.
Fascinating, which is, why I like to study about them, because I just think it is fascinating.
It's so easy to get drawn into a cult. Like, I'm not saying it's not. I just think this particular woman sounded so fucking ridiculous.
And the fact that they found these books in her room, like, highlighting the passages that she was going to use, you know, like...
So was it ever determined that that Cecilia actually had other personalities, or was that just all made up? Everything was made up. Okay.
Yeah, because when she was on the stand, they were like, do you have this? Is this this? And she was like, I never said anything about it.
Oh, okay.
She just deny. So insane. Anyways,
that was a great story. I don't have any idea what I'm doing next week.
So send in an idea.
It'll probably be a disappearance.
I don't know.
Because that's what I love best.
Brogging.
Maybe.
Anyway, but we'll see you next week. Until then, don't follow somebody who says they're a 42nd generational witch.
If they say they can shapeshift, make them prove it.
On your phone.
In front of you. Make them shapeshift.
In front of multiple people, please. And then send it to us.
Yes, please send it to us immediately. Before you become a liability, please send it to us.
So we can keep track of you.
Yes.
Anyway.
We love you all. All right,
we love you. We do. Write us, love us, you know, share us, all that kind of stuff. Send us some ideas, and we will see you next week. Bye.